If you have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to Romans chapter 12. This is primarily where we're going to be tonight. And kind of going along, I don't have the opportunity very often to have theme lessons. And it just so happened I have planned three New Year's themed lessons for today. And I'm going to continue that theme tonight. Of course, I had one in Bible class, one this morning. And I want to conclude by doing that tonight as well. And for tonight, I want us to look at one specific verse in Romans chapter 12 and kind of break it down and look at some lessons that we can learn from it. And I think the lessons that we can learn from this verse are very positive and very driven in the sense that some of these things we're going to be talking about are things that we can carry with us this new year, things that we can apply to our lives to perhaps improve whatever it is we need improving on. And I think it's important for us as people to understand that no matter what we're doing, there's always room for improvement. So focusing on this chapter to kind of set the stage for what I want us to talk about, I want to read Romans 12, verse 1. And then tonight we're going to focus primarily on verse 2 and break it down and talk about some individual components. But Paul, he's writing to the people in Rome, and he says, beginning with verse 1, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Now, as we approach verse 2, I think there are some really beneficial things that we need to remember from this lens of moving forward into this new year. So, real quickly, let's read verse 2. It says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. So this is the verse that I want us to pay close attention to tonight. And the first thing that we need to remember, I think, as we're looking forward to this new year, this is a time, right, when people make New Year's resolutions, where people decide, well, you know what, I'm going to do this differently. I've been doing this, but, well, what are the big ones? I'm going to lose weight in this year. I've said that for a long time. We see how that goes. But people make decisions, right, for what it is they're going to be doing. The first thing I think is important for us to remember as we're looking towards this new year, we do not need to be conformed. Now, what does that mean? It essentially just means that we do not need to comply with the rules, with the standards that the world wants us to be. The world tells us that we need to be this, we need to be that. But I think it's really important for us to understand that we do not need to pay attention to the things that the world is telling us, but rather we need to focus on the things that God tells us. So the question may come, well, why then do we not need to be conformed to this world? Why do we need to avoid the things that people in the world are telling us to do, people in the world are trying to get us to participate in? Well, it's pretty simple. The world is a sinful place. Now, the truth is, that's nothing new. Every one of us in here understands that concept, because the world has been a sinful place going back to the very beginning of time. And I think it's important for us to understand that there's really nothing new about that concept. The world has, in fact, been sinful. It's been like that from the very beginning. In fact, not long after the world was created, the world was also destroyed because of how evil, because of how wicked things had become. And of course, we know about that happening. Turn over to John chapter 12. We're told here that the world is a place of darkness. And beginning with verse 46, John chapter 12, verse 46, it says, this is Jesus speaking. He says, I have come into the world as light, so that whoever believes in me may not remain in darkness. You see, Jesus was the light that came to this world, that offered us this opportunity to not have to live in this dark, sinful world. But notice what he says in verse 47. If anyone hears my words and does not keep them, I do not judge him, for I did not come to judge the world, but to save the world. The one who rejects me and does not receive my words has a judge. The word that I have spoken will judge him on the last day. Now, Jesus is very clear here. He's come here for the purpose of saving people. But this world that he came to was in fact a world of darkness. We don't need to listen. We don't need to be conformed to this world, because this is a sinful place. This is a place where people are going to try to make us do things that we shouldn't. People are going to try to take advantage of us. And in fact, people in the world are out to get Christians. Now, Jesus uses some very strong language about this in John chapter 17, if you want to turn over there. This is a very strong statement that Jesus is making. Beginning with verse 14, notice he says, I have given, now in the context here, Jesus is praying to God as he is about, right before he's about to be taken to be murdered. And in this chapter, he's specifically here, he's praying for his disciples. Verse 14 says, I have given them your word, and the word and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Now, the reason I think we as Christians need to pay very close attention to this is just simply because we need to understand that just like at that time Jesus was saying, there are people out here who hate you because of who you follow. And unfortunately, that's the truth tonight. There are people out in the world who hate us because we follow Jesus. And again, that's very strong language. And I would say most of us in here probably don't like that idea of someone hating us for some reason, right? We like to be liked, I think, in general. Even the person who says, well, I don't care what people think about me, they do. But I think it's something that is difficult for us to process, to know that there are people who do in fact hate us because of who and what we stand for. You see, the world is a terrible place. And Paul here in Romans is given this warning: you don't need to conform to this world. Now, the idea of conformity isn't necessarily one that's bad. Now, I will say there's a lot of people who, and I think I was raised this way, nonconformity is a good thing at times. I've always been the person, and my parents can attest to this. Even when I was a kid, if every single child was playing over in this corner, I would probably be by myself over in the other corner. Sometimes I would do the polar opposite of what people did just for the sake of doing the polar opposite, which isn't always a great thing either. Maybe it was, I've always been a loner, or maybe they didn't want to hang around with me. I don't know. But Nonconformity isn't always a, you know, conformity, excuse me, isn't always a bad thing. You see, all of us need to conform to the image of Jesus. Now, if we conform to what it is the world that's telling us to do, that's the bad thing. Flip back to Romans chapter 8, just a couple of chapters from where we're at. Let's begin with verse 28. And this is Paul writing to the same group of people. He said, "And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those that are called according to his purpose. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those whom he predestined, he also called. And those whom he called, he also justified. And those whom he justified, he also glorified." For us as Christians, we need to conform to this image of Christ so that we can be justified, so that we can be glorified. We don't need to follow what it is the world is doing. We don't need to act like how the world is acting, but we need to imitate Christ. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 11:1, he says, "Be imitators of me as I imitate Christ." He's telling these people, he said, if you want to be like Christ, be like me, because that's who I follow. That's who I imitate. And for us today, that's who we need to follow. We need to make sure we are imitating Jesus. So, no, we don't need to be conformed to this world, but we do need to conform to that image of Jesus. We need to make sure that we do follow the word that we've been given. The second thing I want to focus on that we see in this verse is that we need to be transformed. Notice what he says back to Romans 12, verse 2. "But be transformed by the renewal of your mind." This idea of deciding I'm ready to be transformed is a mental thing. Once we commit to the cause of Christ, it's a decision that we have to make. And then that's when the transformation, a beautiful transformation can take place. There's a point, I think, in each Christian's life, or before someone becomes a Christian, where this understanding has to come that there's something about me that needs to change. There's something in my life that I'm doing that just isn't working. And a transformation has to take place. I spend a lot of time on Facebook Watch. I don't know if any of you do that too or not. I fall into this trap of watching videos on Facebook all the time. And some of my favorite videos to watch are these do-it-yourself videos where you can see how to make something. You can watch someone build something. I don't know. There's a lot of things. It's crazy. And every time I watch those videos, I think, I can do that. But I couldn't. And I understand that. But it's still fun to think about that, right? I saw a video one time of a man. He was in a forest and he found this tree that had recently been broken in half or something, and he cut pieces of the tree and took back to a shop, and he crafted this beautiful guitar out of this tree that he had found. It was just this useless piece of wood that was in a forest, but in the proper hands, it was transformed into something beautiful. I think it's important to understand that us as people can be just like that. We may come to God this ugly mess, but we can be transformed into something beautiful, something useful to him. Turn over to Jeremiah chapter 18. And in this chapter, beginning with the first few verses of this chapter, we see a transformation take place. And it specifically has to do with a potter going to a potter's wheel, taking a spoiled, useless piece of clay and making it into something useful. Let's begin reading with verse 1. It says, "The word came to Jeremiah from the Lord, 'Arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will let you hear my words.' So I went down to the potter's house, and there he was working at his wheel, and the vessel he was making of clay was spoiled in the potter's hands, and he reworked it into another vessel, and it seemed good to the potter. Verse 5, then the word of the Lord came to me, 'O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter has done, declared the Lord.'" This turns out to be an analogy of what God could do within the context here, this broken people, this spoiled group of people, this useless group of people who had turned their back on God. He's saying, "I can do this if you would allow me to." And I think us as people today, when we realize this need to be transformed, one thing that we need to understand is there's nothing that God cannot transform. There's nothing we have done that can keep us from becoming a child of God. And he can transform us into something useful, into something beautiful. Now, yes, I've watched videos on Facebook on how potters will take pieces of clay and form into, you know, beautiful pieces of pottery. I could never do that. For some reason, at my birthday, well, Alan always does this thing where he always gives whenever a birthday comes up, he always has to give everyone what he calls a gag gift. You would not believe the junk we have accumulated because of him. I mean, it's terrible. But my birthday, he gave me a potter's wheel. I don't know why. So I literally have it sitting in a box in my bedroom. It hasn't been opened. And part of me is like, well, maybe I could try to do that. I'm going to tell you this. I know I can't. I may give it a try one day. But the thing is, God can take something that appears to be useless, like a piece of clay, and mold it into something great. God can take each and every person in here, no matter how broken, no matter how spoiled, and he can mold us into something beautiful. And that's part of this transformation, is allowing God to take over our lives. So we don't need to be conformed to the world. We need to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. We need to allow God to transform us. Thirdly, one thing that's important for us to understand is that the testing of our faith can be a positive thing. Notice it says that by testing you may discern what is the will of God. Now, I think sometimes we look at this and think, tests don't always seem positive to me. I think back to being in school. I hated taking tests. I really did. And there's probably a lot of you in here who feel the same way. I don't know. Some of you may be students. You may despise them. But there's a reason, and I learned this much later after I took all the tests, but there's a reason that they give you these tests. They want to see how much you learn, how much you've learned. Sometimes testing ourselves is a good thing. I think about sports. I'm a big football fan. Y'all know that. A lot of times when teams go to play when a good team goes to play another good team, they'll refer to that as a big test for the team. You know, teams that are supposedly good aren't necessarily tested if they never play teams as good as they are. To strengthen ourselves, to find out how good we can be, sometimes we have to be tested. sometimes the tests don't make that much sense to us. That's just the reality of it. Turn over to James chapter 1. We see this concept being mentioned beginning with verse 12. In James 1 it says, "Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive a crown of life." Some of us, we know what it's like. I would say all of us know what it's like to be tested. We know what it's like to fall into various trials that can really break us down. But James is saying here, if you're steadfast, when this test is over, you're going to be that much better for it. Skip ahead a few verses back in verse 2 in James 1. He says, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know the testing of your faith produces steadfastness." Now, for those of us, when we've gone through trials, when we've gone through troubles, how many of us run around yelling, "Oh, I'm so joyful, this bad thing's happening to me, I've lost my job, I've lost my house, I'm joyful." No, this isn't necessarily what he's talking about. The joy comes in the aftermath of knowing that God was there to get you through it. So, when our faith is tested, it's not always a bad thing. When we go through trials, when we go through tests in our lives, it can strengthen us. Now, we may not see it right there in the moment, but when we come out on the other side, we'll be blessed for it. And then the final thing I want to mention tonight, just to recap, we don't need to be conformed. We need to be transformed. The testing of our faith can be a positive thing. The final thing is this. We simply need to strive for what is good, acceptable, and perfect. It's as clear as that. It's as simple as that. Now, we all understand that this concept of perfection is not attainable. We know that. We know that none of us can be perfect as Jesus was. But we should also understand that for us as Christians, we need to keep working to do better. All of us, no matter where we're at in our lives, no matter what we're doing, there's always room to improve. There's always room to get better. And we need to continue striving for this level of perfection that ultimately we won't reach. We know that. But we have to keep pressing on towards that. Turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And Paul here, he's talking about a trial, so to speak, that he is personally facing at this time. Something that is really bothering him. And he refers to as a thorn in his flesh. Something that he feels like is hindering him. And he said he went to God 3 times to take this thorn away. But in verse 9, and I think this is a key verse we need to carry with us this year as we're moving forward. It says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.'" We're not perfect. But God is. And through all of our flaws, through all of our trials, it's God's grace, God's perfection that can strengthen us when we are weak. No, we're not going to be perfect. But God's grace is there for us because of the fact that we're not perfect. Jesus was perfect. We know that. The scriptures say that. Hebrews chapter 5, beginning with verse 8, it says here, Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered, and being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. Because Jesus was perfect, because we had a perfect example, we have this opportunity of salvation. And then, though we're not perfect, we have God's grace, and Jesus was in fact perfect. We do have something that is perfect, and that is God's Word. Now, if you turn over to 1 Corinthians 13, this is the chapter that most people refer to as the love chapter. But there's a really interesting verse here, something that Paul says. And I'm going to begin with I'm going to begin with reading verse 8. And this is 1 Corinthians 13. It says, "Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away." Now, it's interesting, the phrase here, it says, when the perfect comes. Now, at the time Paul is writing this, it should let us know that to the people he's specifically writing to, this perfect that he is talking about has not come. So the question to us is, what is he talking about? Well, could he be talking about Jesus here? Well, roughly 30 years after he had been crucified, after, you know, really more than 60 years after he had already come? No, he wasn't talking about Jesus. Maybe he was talking about the church. Well, the church had been established 20 or 30 years before this was even written. He wasn't talking about the church. What was he talking about? He was talking about the completed Word of God. No, we're not perfect, but we do have a perfect God in our possession. And that's what we need to keep in mind tonight. Though we cannot obtain perfection, we need to continue to strive for what is good, what is acceptable, and what is perfect. So I think moving forward into this new year, this is a good verse to keep in mind. There are a lot of good concepts that we can carry with us while we're all motivated, while we're ready to complete our New Year's resolutions. Let's add this to the list tonight. Let's decide not to be conformed to this world, but to allow God to transform us. And sometimes bad things are going to happen to us. When we sign up to be a Christian, it doesn't mean life is going to be wonderful. In fact, we're told quite the opposite in the Scriptures. There are trials, there are tests that will come our way, but tests aren't always a bad thing. And it can be a great benefit for us in the long run. And then finally, we need to continue to strive for what is good, acceptable, and perfect. Even though we'll never reach this, you know, Jesus' level of perfection, we need to continually strive and work to do that. So as we move forward into this new year, let's remember these things. Tonight, we'd like to give anyone an opportunity who hasn't obeyed God's word one last time to do that today before we leave here. Or maybe if you're here and you need prayers of the church, we'd like to give you an opportunity to do those things here tonight while we stand and sing.